Welcome to the final session of our three-part Imagine series focused on cancer equity. Today's segment is on elevating the patient's voice. Through this series, we have hosted collaborative sessions focused on social determinants of health and the role that family reach in our collaborative community can play in understanding and ultimately reducing the barriers so many face when fighting cancer. This three-part series is focused on disparities in cancer care. Through the past two sessions, we've invited experts to examine and share how social determinants create inequities in accessing and adhering cancer treatment. We have learned about racial inequities in insurance coverage, language barriers that can cause severe miscommunication on a patient's course of treatment, and how housing and food insecurities prevent patients from prioritizing their cancer care. If you missed those sessions, you can access them. They were recorded on the Family Reach website. These conversations highlighted statistics and data that show the strong connection between race and ethnicity and debilitating financial barriers. The data begins to tell us why this work must be prioritized in the cancer space. And a key voice has been missing from this conversation to this point, the patient voice, the voice of the caregiver, the families who are navigating these barriers every day. And that's why today's conversation is so critical and frankly, refreshing. I'm thrilled to now welcome our speakers and I'm grateful for their courage to share their stories with us. Our scheduled moderator was for our friend, Dr. Carol Brown, who I worked with on the Biden Cancer Initiative. She unfortunately had to step out, but has handed the reins to the wonderful Felicia Ellerby. Felicia is a certified registered nurse who works with surgical oncology patients. Felicia is also a member of the National Black Nurses Association, the Concerned Black Nurses of Newark, New Jersey chapter, and a member of the Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Incorporated. Felicia will be leading a conversation with two incredible women who are here to share their personal stories, Maricela and Tamika. Maricela is a caregiver to her younger sister, Estralita, who is a pediatric cancer patient at Mount Sinai in New York City. Tamika is a cervical cancer survivor. Her personal experiences inspired her to launch Survivor, a community of cervical cancer advocates. Welcome, Felicia, Maricela, and Tamika. Thank you again for sharing your time with us today. We are eager to dive into this important conversation, so I am going to hop off and let you take it away.
Thank you, Carla, and good morning, everyone. To Family Reach, thank you so much for the important work that you do to support the most vulnerable populations facing cancer. And thank you so much for inviting me to be part of this very important conversation today. As a healthcare provider who cares for patients and families with a cancer diagnosis, I know how important it is to have this conversation, and I consider it such an honor and a privilege that you've asked me to be part. So without further delay, let's get started. Thank you, Tamika and Maricela, for being here today. I'd like to start the conversation by inviting you both to tell the pieces of your cancer story that you are comfortable sharing. Tamika, if you don't mind, let's get started with you.
Sure. I am thankful to you and Family Reach for having me here today to share my story. I was diagnosed when I was 25 years old back in 2001 with cervical cancer. I didn't know anything about it and it was a complete shock to me. I was scared. I thought I was going to die. And it was just a wormhole of life events happening at me all at once. When I started going through the whole treatment and knowing and finding out more and realizing that I had to have a radical hysterectomy, I was devastated. I was still scared that I was going to lose my life, but I was devastated that I was losing my fertility at 25. I did not take advantage of a lot of resources that were there at the time, some that were offered to me, some that were not. And so as I went through the survivorship phase, I started thinking about the things that I wish I knew or I wish I had. And I think a lot of us go through that. And so that's what I started to do. I started by putting a list together for future friends and family that may go through a cancer experience, because I wanted them to have a cheat sheet, if you will, of how they could navigate the cancer world. And so I want everyone to know, whether it is a patient or a caregiver, that they're just simply not alone.
That's so true, Tamika. Maricela, welcome as well this morning. Nice to have you with us. And I'd like to invite you to tell us a little bit about your cancer story.
Well, my name is Maricela. Thank you for having me. I am the sister of Estrellita Pacheco. She was diagnosed with B-cell acute lymphoblastic leukemia. So I'm a caregiver. I help her out and I help my mom out. And it was very devastating for us to find out that she had cancer. It was something that we did not, we didn't see it coming. And like Tamika said, we thought she was going to die. I think that's pretty much what you think when you get diagnosed with cancer. You pretty much think that your loved one is dying, and it's a really surreal moment, and it's such a hard thing to process. And I'm just happy to be here and share and help maybe other patients who are going through it and other caregivers. So I'm really excited to be here. Thank you.
Great. It's definitely very important that both of you are here today to share your stories. So let's shift the focus of the discussion a little bit to financial challenges, because we know that that is a huge part of facing a cancer diagnosis. Tamika, can you reflect on if and how financial barriers developed and popped up during your treatment?
You know, at 25, I was making what I thought at 25, a good salary, taking care of myself. I had my own home, my own car, living in, you know, states away from my family. But when cancer came in, I found myself at parts of my treatment having just $20. The little of savings that I had was depleted. I was new at a job. I didn't have a lot of time off. Luckily, there was a donation bank of leave, so people shared that leave with me. But at the same time, I found myself left with only $20, and I had to stretch that $20 for transportation, for food, for co-pays, for medication. What I'm listing, you already know that $20 will not cover that. And it was a very humbling time in my life. And I had never, ever been in a situation like that ever before. And cancer affects everyone. I think a lot of people, when they think of healthcare disparities, they just think that it's a certain community of color and they have a low socioeconomic background. But cancer can come in and really deplete funds at every single level, and especially if you're already on the bottom of the pole trying to make ends meet. And so I am always very clear about, you know, cancer nearly bankrupted me. And there's so many stories of people who have been bankrupt because of cancer. And I wish that we didn't have that issue, but I'm happy that there are resources like Family Reach that can help families provide for others.
So Tamika, if we could just stay with you for a few minutes. Did you find yourself during that time having to make choices and, you know, trade-offs for, you know, having such a small amount of resources, but having to, you know, make some hard decisions around that?
Absolutely. I decided that I would not pay my car payment. I couldn't drive at the time. And in my mind, that it made sense. And my car got taken away from me. I was lucky that I got it back pretty quickly. But it was during that time that I realized, like, I need help. I have to ask for help. I have to share what's happening with me, and I have to let people know. And it was embarrassing, but what was I going to do? I also didn't need the burden of stressing about financial issues during a cancer treatment when I needed to keep myself not just physically up, but also emotionally up. And so when finances put that extra burden on someone, it really messes with their social, emotional well-being, because cancer isn't about just fighting the physical aspect of it. It's about fighting the mental aspect of it as well.
Absolutely. It's so true. I mean, I have personal examples as well, but what you said is so, so very true. Maricela, what types of financial barriers played a role for you and your family, you know, as you went through your sister's diagnosis of cancer?
Pandemic. The pandemic was right at its peak. My mom lost her job. My brother lost his job. And I was basically the only one working in the household. So it was a really, really hard because I knew my mom is a single mom. She's been a single mom for almost 49 years. And so I know that it was really hard for her. And it was time for me to step in and help her out. It has been a bit hard for me because I have 3 kids too. I am also a single mom. And so during the time where my sister was diagnosed, she was in the hospital for 2 months. And so not only did I have to worry about paying the rent, paying the light bills, also my sister, she wasn't eating as much in the hospital. She didn't like the food. And so sometimes I would have to go out of my ways coming from work. I had to cook and I would pack her a meal and I would go drop it off. And sometimes that required me to, you know, grab a taxi or, you know, ask for a friend to come and give me a ride and things like that. So it was a really, really stressful moment in life, but I pushed through. I had savings too, and I was able to, you know, the savings were able to help me too and to get through and get by. But it was really, it's been a really difficult road for us too.
I definitely know what you're meaning. A lot of times patients don't like the food at the hospital. And a lot of times we'll see that the family members will bring in, you know, the meals for the patient. So I definitely know that there is an expense related to that on top of your already heavy expenses at home. So thank you for sharing that as well. So given this series that Family Reach has put together, the focus of this Imagine series on health disparities, particularly racial inequities. If you both would take a moment and just reflect on this topic, Tamika, first you, did you feel, I mean, and it's an honest, you know, it's going to be an honest answer that I'm asking you to give, but did you really feel like your race or ethnicity played a role throughout your journey and the treatment that you received for cancer?
You know, not initially. And I am very blessed in that way because I've heard so many stories that have been otherwise. I also know stories from my own family. But I do know that it does play a factor. But I'm hopeful as we move through this world collectively together that doing stuff like this will help make it less of a disparity for others. One of the ways that I did feel that my race did play a factor was on the survivorship aspect of it. When I was trying to preserve my fertility, there were my medical staff. They were amazing. The clinicians and everyone, they told me what I needed to do. They told me the channels to go through. And unfortunately, it did not happen for me in the way that we all had hoped. I was not able to preserve my fertility in harvesting eggs, but we had hoped that in the future that I would be able to have a child via surrogate. So when I started that part of the process, which as many people know is extremely expensive, that's when my race played a factor. And to this day, it's still something that is very emotional and difficult for me. When I went to speak to the fertility doctor, my husband and I went, we had all our paperwork. We had several calls up to it. My husband walked in with his blue collar uniform and the conversation changed when he came in the room. And it was, I think, you know, we won't be successful on the first try. This is something that you'll have to do multiple times. It's very expensive. So I think adoption is the best for you. And I didn't understand because we had gone through all the pre-interviews. We had submitted all the financial documents and everything else. That should not have been the case. And I don't have a definitive answer if that's what it was, but that's what it was. We all felt it. Even my oncology team, they didn't understand it. My primary care physician didn't understand it because we had all of the medical documents that said that this would work, that said that we could do it, but it came down to a dollar amount and not thinking that we could do that financial amount. And that's a difficult pill. And so for me, it's bittersweet because I helped change legislation in my home state with many other great advocates to make it where for cancer patients, young adult cancer patients, fertility costs are covered. So it's bittersweet that it's not for me, right. But I'm happy to know that I played a part in helping other people, and it will allow them to be covered regardless of the color of their skin or sexual orientation.
That's amazing, Tamika, that you were part of that change. You were that type of change agent. You took the experience that you had and just were determined to make it different for someone else. I mean, I just applaud you with that. That is amazing. Maricela, if you could, you know, speak for a few minutes on this topic as well. How do you feel that either your race or ethnicity has played a role in your family's experience with your sister Estrelita's cancer treatment?
I would say our race and ethnicity has played, not like initially, like Tamika said, the doctors, our clinicians, the nurses, they have been very, very helpful. They have provided a lot of resources for us to reach out, and even they reach out for us. But I have seen that there are certain procedures where we do see kind of like, you know, the inequality. My sister has to get a lumbar puncture, which is a procedure that she gets on her back and her spine. And it's just to check for any cancer cells, if the treatment is going well. She receives intravenous chemo through there too. And we have seen that during those procedures, they give us a certain time that we have to be there. And most of the time we wait for 3 or 4 hours. And sometimes that is very frustrating because she has to not eat for a day before. And so the next day when she wakes up and she has to get the procedure done and she's been waiting for such a long time, she wants to drink or she wants to eat. She gets frustrated. She cries. And we have seen that usually sometimes Caucasian people come in the clinic and they get the first serve. And we've been there before them and we're still waiting. We talk to the nurses, the doctors that are there, and they usually tell us, oh, something happened or an emergency is going on. We can't do it right now. We're looking for this and that. And they're always giving us, you know, excuses, and we have to wait for such a long time. So that's where I see the inequality. It's really sad to see that, you know, we're not, you know, giving the primary care that we need. And it's very, you know, it's just something that you have to just really deal with it. Like there's, you know, you can't really do anything about it. That's something that's been going on for quite some time. And so that's where I see that our race and ethnicity plays a role a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a quote that I keep with me very closely. People don't remember what you necessarily did, but how you made them feel. So it's really startling to hear that that's the feeling that you had as well. Maricela, if you don't mind, could you talk a little bit about, do you feel like language was a barrier at all with dealing with healthcare providers or in your sister's treatment time?
Language has played a big role too. My mom, she speaks Spanish. So she doesn't know English. She has been here for such a long time that she does understand it, but she doesn't know how to answer back. And so that has played a big role too, because there are medical terms that, you know, doctors use and my mom doesn't understand. So sometimes I have to call out from work and go with my mom and, you know, get all the information translated to my mom. But when I'm not able to do that, in the hospital, they use the machine that they plug in and it will serve as a translator. And so it's not the same thing as having a one-on-one person or a human being, you know, there to translate and to reassure you about the process and what's going on. So that has been a big role too. It has been very hard because my mom doesn't understand sometimes. And so, you know, the doctors try as much as they can to explain, but, you know, I feel like the doctors sometimes, or the hospitals in general, they need to have people who are able to translate and able to make that communication with other parents, because we have seen a lot of parents in the clinic that are Spanish speakers and they don't have someone there for them to, you know, get these situations translated, these medical terms. And so that is really something that we have to change. And so language has played a big role too.
Okay, thanks for elaborating on that. And I totally agree with you. It's like a basic thing. Like, people need to be able to understand the conversation that a healthcare provider is having. How can you make decisions, you know, around, you know, future treatments or choices that you have if you don't understand the basics? So Tamika, I'm going to come back to you as well. Do you feel like the experience that you had, you know, around race, ethnicity, and, you know, your treatment, do you feel like that affected the ability that you had to access services like those from Family Reach or other nonprofit organizations? Like, what would you suggest happen in the system to change these types of disparities?
I think the unfortunate thing is that when you are a person of color, I don't necessarily like to use the word minority. I think that is a word that we should remove from our vocabulary, especially because people are of color, according to the census, are becoming the majority in, you know, the world. So what I want to really talk about is that there is such a low bar of expectation among communities of color when we initially go into any circumstance where there is already a health disparity gap. And so expectations are exceedingly low. And for me, that's the thing I think that is the hardest. So to answer your question, when I went into it with a low bar of expectations, which is not how you should go in to any type of medical emergency, medical diagnosis situation. Now, I have to say, my experience was way better than my expectations. Were there things that I had to fight for? Absolutely. Were there things that I had to point out because of, you know, my ethnicity, maybe we should try this or maybe we should do that? I think that people are really working on understanding the certain nuances that are within certain cultures and ethnicities. And I think that has to continue to evolve, because we cannot look at treatment as a one shoe fits all. But in also saying that, we can't look at treatment, well, if we have this group that's in a smaller population and they're already, you know, doing poorly, let's just move them over here. Not that we forget about them, but put it on the back table, and eventually there'll be more research to help or do whatever. It's about working on things now so that there are greater experiences and better outcomes for patients. So my experience overall was great because I'm here, and that's what I focus it on. My quality of life is pretty good, right? But I look at other people who didn't have the same medical team that I had. They weren't offered everything that I was offered. And it is horrific that people do not have equal care across the board. We all should be treated the same, no matter of the color of our skin, the languages that we speak, or our sexual orientation. We need to make sure that, you know, healthcare is equal, and that where there are gaps, that we're all working to close those gaps.
And what I'm hearing you say as well, Tamika, is like the importance of advocating either for oneself or having someone that can advocate for you. I mean, you definitely have, you know, the courage to use your voice. So how important is that?
Definitely. Well, let me tell you about my courage. I've always had a voice. I've always spoken my truth. I've always said how I felt. But when I was diagnosed with cancer, I felt silenced. I was so grief-stricken. I was so shell-shocked, in disbelief, destroyed from hearing those words, "You have cancer," that I lost my voice. I remember having to have someone come, my cousin, and take notes because I could not stop crying. I look back and I couldn't make a decision for myself. I wanted to, but I felt powerless. So if you find yourself in a place where you cannot speak because of the burden that cancer weighs upon you, then you have to have someone there on your behalf. Someone like a sister who is passionate about your survivor, right? And also knowing that, you know, the family as a whole needs support. I didn't think about that when I was going through my diagnosis. I kept saying I was fine because I wanted everyone else to be fine. When I came through it on the other side, I realized not only the financial burden that my family went through, but the emotional toll that my cancer diagnosis took on them because I felt powerless. And so I know what it's like to have my voice, but I know what it's like to feel powerless and voiceless also.
That's a great, great point that you brought out. And just the fact that a cancer diagnosis affects everyone in the family. It doesn't just affect the patient. It affects every single member of the family. And it's overwhelming. You know, it can be overwhelming, not only hearing those words that you spoke about, but just trying to figure out how to cope, you know, through and, this.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. And I want to make sure, like, there are great medical staff out there. They're great clinicians. But there are ways that people fall through cracks. And so that's what I want to fix. You know, my good friend, Johnny Emmerman from Emmerman's Angels always said there are all these little cracks in the foundation. If we all take a little crack to fill them, we become a whole lot better. And so for me, it's about doing that part and showing people that you have the power to change your circumstance. But unfortunately, sometimes you have to fight for what you need. And that takes a toll on you too, but you're worth it.
Exactly. Absolutely. And Maricela, I mean, I could see the courage as well in you, the fact that you stepped up and, I mean, you supported your family through this very, very difficult time. Do you feel like the experiences that you had as well with either feeling that you were treated differently because of race or the ethnicity, did that affect the services that you were able to get from different organizations or services that your sister was able to receive? And what would you say to folks that are listening to try to change that?
I would say overall, our experience hasn't been that bad. We have a great medical staff. They have treated us very welcoming, like family. You know, even though we have had these little disparities here and there, they have been very welcoming. They're always looking for ways to help us. They're always reaching out with, you know, resources like Family Reach and other places for us to get the help if we need it. And so I feel very happy that they're also very on board with helping. And, you know, we've had these little mishaps here and there, but overall our experience has been very good. My sister has been treated very well. And I would also say that I know my, you know, the language barrier, even though my mom doesn't speak English, I wasn't there when my sister was in the hospital. I had to come back due to COVID. We couldn't be there. So my mom stayed back with her. But I do remember that when my sister was diagnosed, my mom was super on board and she fought for everything. She was like, yes, we're going to go with this. We're going to do the treatment. And so I was very, very happy and very proud of my mom, because even though she, in the moment, it was really hard and surreal, she was very on board and she fought through. And even till this day, if something happens and she doesn't like it, she's always there on top. Even if she doesn't speak English, she'll come out with it somewhere and she'll fight for my sister's rights. And so I'm very proud and very happy that, you know, my mom is such a strong woman and that the language hasn't been something that has stopped her. And so I feel very proud. And, you know, like Tamika said, I think there's little cracks and if we put that little, you know, that little seed right there and we plant it, then we're, you know, maybe we won't help a lot of people, but one person makes a difference and that's all that matters. And so, you know, I'm very happy and my sister is still here and I'm very grateful that, you know, we were able to catch it on time, and I'm hoping that moving forward she'll get better. And yeah, I'm very excited to be here today with you guys.
We definitely share those wishes as well, Maricela. So Tamika and Maricela, just thinking, you know, first of all, we thank you both for sharing these very intimate details. They're very personal, and we really appreciate the fact that you shared them today. But as you know, many of the viewers and listeners today that are on this event work in healthcare, or they work for nonprofits who offer services to patients in need. Just thinking back, like, what advice do you have from, you know, from your experience to offer these organizations about how they can best engage patients and caregivers in developing meaningful programs that address some of the gaps that we're talking about today? First, Tamika.
Yeah, sure. My number one would be look at your literature, look at your programs, and look and see, you know, who are the community that you're referencing in your pamphlets, in your videos. You know, is it something that is inclusive and diverse, or is it something that someone would look at and not see themselves or their loved one? Also, as you're doing that, know that people need resources. Just because someone on paper doesn't look like they need financial or emotional support doesn't mean that it's so. Medical burdens really make finances hard. And I think that it is imperative to offer resources even when you think someone might not need it, because they may need it along the way. They may not need it at the beginning of treatment. Maybe they need it midway through or towards the end when they are financially, you know, just in despair because of it. So resources are important. Sharing those resources, making sure the resources that you share are inclusive of everyone. And also to be mindful of the words that are used in your messaging, because it could be off-putting. And listen, I'm the first one to say it's work, but it's necessary work that we all have to do.
Absolutely. I mean, you brought up some great points. Just the fact that, you know, you have literature or videos or commercials or, you know, any type of marketing type information that's out there, it needs to be inclusive for sure. And as you said, someone's cancer journey may not be a short journey. It may be a longer journey. So in the beginning, you may not need those support, you know, that type of support, but you know, it's definitely something that you should be constantly checking in or constantly, you know, aware that needs could change. And Maricela, what would you say to those that are listening today, you know, nonprofits and other agencies that are out there to help patients with cancer? Like, what would you say that they could do to help engage patients and caregivers and make the services that they provide more meaningful?
I would say having more diversity in their organization, having more people who can relate to you know, to Spanish people, persons, or whichever race there are. I feel like having diversity in your job also helps a lot, because maybe you won't be able to get through, but maybe this other person might be able to get through to the families. And like Tamika said, just like, check in all the time. Sometimes it may seem like we don't need the help, and I include my family, because we were very adamant to take the help. Sometimes we say no, we don't need it, but in reality, sometimes we do. We have the burden. Sometimes we don't make ends meet, or we have to stretch that $20 or those $100. And so I would say, just reach out, be consistent, and you know, just try to keep in check and check on people. And it's really hard, especially cultural. I think it's something that people tend to not, Hispanics especially, they tend to not reach out if they need help. It's really embarrassing. It's something that you don't talk about. Even if you're needing the help, financially or emotionally is something that we don't speak about. It's something that we do not look for. And so I feel like we should, you know, organizations should reach out and should, you know, always check in and just kind of be there every step of the way, because we do need it. And even though it's something that's cultural, people don't seem to understand that this is something that we do need. You know, we do need to get help emotionally, because having someone, a sister, a mother, a brother with cancer, it's super difficult. It's super hard. Because sometimes you're trying to be the strong one too. And, you know, at some point you're going to get rock bottom, especially emotionally. So, you know, I feel like just kind of having that diversity in your job and just reaching out and staying in touch with, you know, with the families.
Absolutely. Well, I have to say today has been an absolute pleasure for me. Thank you, Tamika. Thank you, Maricela, for allowing me to not only just hear your story, but talk to you more about your story and, you know, what you've shared today. I have no doubt that it's going to change the outcome for someone in the future. So thank you so much for being here and doing that. And at this time, welcome. You're very welcome. At this time, I'm going to turn it back into the hands of Carla Tardif, the CEO of Family Reach.
Incredible, ladies. Absolutely incredible. Your strength, your clarity, your word choice, your honesty. Maricela and Tamika, there are no words for me to be able to say how much we all appreciate what you brought forward for us today. It's absolutely what we need to do to make change. So I wanna thank you. And Felicia, for you stepping in at the last minute to make this such a safe place to have this conversation. Deep gratitude for the three of you. We had a couple questions, so I'm going to take full advantage of this moment and ask. We have a wide variety of professionals watching today on this call, including a number of financial planners. Family Reach has a financial planning for cancer program, and our financial planners are asking, what are the most important things a planner can consider when approaching a person with cancer? Is that something, Tamika, or is that something you could answer?
Yeah, I mean, don't approach with any biases that you may have. I mean, we all have them, everyone. We all do. That's the truth. Let's just rip the Band-Aid off of that and say it. We all have little biases, whether it's something that we thought we knew about a different culture or whatever. We all have them. Let's remove them and hit the reset button and start over. Have people, you provide a service, right? So you bring your expertise. Bring your expertise without any biases of what you think someone may be. Not everyone who is a certain color is in a certain financial demographic or always looking for a handout. There are people, as Maricela said earlier, who need help, but they won't even ask for a hand up. So it's very important to come with your expertise, but without any implicit bias.
Fantastic. Maricela?
I'm right on board with Tamika. And I would also want to say, you know, I think maybe like come with your heart on your sleeve, you know, like come with you as yourself and just be kind, you know, be aware of being kind to others, especially to families who are going through cancer. I think just, you know, being yourself and being true, I think that's going to open a lot of doors. And yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say, just because she mentioned the word kind, you know, when I think about it, most people were kind, but when that one person comes in that isn't kind, it just sours the whole experience. And so dealing with this type of stuff, you need kindness. It's the humanity. You have to put the humanity in this work. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Great point. And I always like to ask this question of patients, and it's not an easy one. But if you had a magic wand, and I would love to hand you both a magic wand, it could change one thing about your cancer journey. What would it be? Besides not getting cancer at all, because that's what I would say. That's what it would
be, even though that would mean that I wouldn't be here with all of you, but that's what it would be. There's this movie, I can't think of it right now. It starts with an E. I don't even remember the cast in it. It's a fantasy movie in the future. But basically, whatever illness someone has, you can go through this machine, you hit a button, what it is, and it fixes them, right?
Is anyone listening? Can do that? Put that on the list.
And I watched that and I was still dealing with the trauma of my cancer. And I was like, wouldn't it be great if this was real and not fiction? And I know, but hey, you never know. We're still.
I gave you a magic wand. That's what you did.
A magic wand. So that's what I want.
Maricela, do you have anything non-fictional or not fictional?
I don't really know. I mean, aside from maybe taking the cancer away from his sister, I don't know. I would say it's kind of bittersweet because even though we're going through this experience, I feel like this has also brought us together as a family. It has also made us more humble. Particularly with me, I feel like it has made me be more aware of cherishing my family, my sister, my kids. And almost every day, I always tell my kids I love them. I tell my sister I love her. And so, you know, I think I would want to do that, you know, take the cancer away from my sister. But at the same time, I would, if we had to go through it again, I feel like I would want to go through it again. Because you cherish, you're more aware and you're more in love with what you're doing and just enjoying every day with your loved ones.
Yeah, beautiful. Felicia, how would you answer that question as a nurse in what the perspective you have? What would you change if there was one thing?
I mean, definitely along the same lines as what Tamika said earlier, just removing those biases, removing, what you think you know about a certain group. I definitely hear it from patients. I hear it from and sometimes, you know, you can kind of see those behaviors yourself in people that are caring for patients. So, you know, just know that cancer is the great equalizer. I mean, it is definitely the great equalizer. I treat patients from one end of the spectrum to the other. But when they're dealing with cancer, I think it brings everybody to the same level. So just enter knowing that and just having a pure heart to know that you're there to help the patient.
Yep. That's what we say at Family Reach all the time, to show up, just keep showing up. And I loved that word kindness as well. So ladies, we are going to wrap up. This conversation does not end here. We launched Imagine Cancer Equity to open the conversation on social determinants of health and begin to evaluate the opportunity that Family Reach has to better serve our families, that all of us who took the time to tune in, we know everyone wants to do that. So thank you for being a catalyst of that. Over this three sessions, we've learned the critical need to apply a racial equity lens to our programs as we go forward. Yes, our mission was born out of health disparities. And yes, we have served patients of all socioeconomic backgrounds for the past 25 years. And while all of that is true, what we've learned over the past year doing this work is that the effect of systemic racism matter, particularly when it comes to a patient's financial health. If we continue to deliver our services without taking this context into account, we will fail the patient and the caregivers who need us. This conversation is important, and I can't stress enough how important your voice is. So stay tuned for more details on our next steps in addressing the connection between race, geography, and financial health, and the role they play during a patient's cancer treatment, and our commitment to address these needs through our financial treatment program, which are financial wraparound services. They include early interventions, emergency relief, health literacy, health education. So finally, I want to offer a special thank you to our sponsors who made these important conversations possible. These companies have been with us for a long time. They continue to show up for our cancer patients. I want to thank Agios, Janssen, Takeda, Foundation Medicine, and Kite. You all make us better. Let's keep doing this together. And today we took a huge leap forward together. Thank you, everybody.